Everybody, best show on WFMU, back again for another Tuesday night installment, taking you all the way till 11 p.m. My name is Tom Sharpling, and I'll be the host of tonight's installment. Special, action-packed program tonight, loaded with excitement. We were away for a week. I want to thank... Oh, it's so embarrassing. Who do I want to thank? I forget. Who filled in? Goo, not too embarrassing.
Hold on.
I want to thank Jason Doss for filling in for me. Thank you, Jason. Best show on WFMU back, though, after a one-week absence. And tonight will be an exciting program. We have the director of the movie that everybody's talking about now, The Devil and Daniel Johnston. Jeff Fierzig is going to be on the program in the hour number two of the show. We will be joined by Jeff Fierzig. Talking all about his hot new documentary, which is coming out, I believe, this Friday. We just heard The Zombies getting us started. This will be our year, and I send that out. To NFL on Fox. Weather Woman, and Good Morning LA, personality, Jillian Barbary, I send that out to you. Sally Crew and the Sudden Moves before that, from their 10-minute Moment of Truth EP. We heard Call the Police. Think we might want to call the police. We got a skipping CD here. Sally Crew and the Sudden Moves. Good stuff. For that, Little Teddy. Wouldn't be the best show without Teddy. Ted Leo and the Pharmacist. Saw them at the Knitting Factory the other night. Hot rockin' show. Teddy gave a shout out to Newbridge from the stage. And we heard the title track of Shake the Sheets. Teddy's all about getting it done. Teddy's about getting it done. This guy don't just sit there. This guy had no voice, but he probably can't even talk now. Guy was blowing it out on stage. I never saw anything like it. The Cuts before that, they have a hot new album out called From Here On Out. And a really amazing song on it called I'm Not Down. Is that the song? I think it's I'm Not Down. It's track 3. Let's make sure it's I'm Not Down. Doot, 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 doot. It looks like it's I'm Not Down. It's just that they mentioned demons in it, and there's a song called Demons that's track number two. You can find more out about that and other issues regarding the cuts by going to Birdman Records. Their website is thebirdmangroup.com. Not Harvey Birdman. Harvey Birdman, and that's so funny. Eagles of Death Metal, speaking of birds, ha 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 ha. Oh, if I only planned that. From their album, Death by Sexy. I got a feeling. And that is on the Downtown record label. Find out more about that on the internet. Or at your local record store. If you go over to your local Sam Goody's, you want to find out about the cuts or the Eagles of Death Metal, just please go ask over at your local J&R Music World or the Wiz or Sam Goody or Crazy Eddie's still in business. Right, Mike? You think they're gone? I think there's still one left. Like one outpost. I think it was on Route 22. I don't think they sell records anymore, though. I think they were selling adult novelties. ...201-209-9368 is the phone number here on The Best Show. It's Open Phone Tuesday right now. Open Phone Tuesday. We've got so much to do. Top of the next hour, we've got Jeff Fierzig, director of The Devil, and Daniel Johnson is going to give us the 411 on the movie he's got coming out this Friday. It's going to be very exciting. If you've got questions for him, you get him ready. We'll take your calls. But in the meantime, Open Phone Tuesday. What do I have to review here? Blah, 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 blah. The podcast. You always want the best shows podcasting now. Go sign up for the podcast. Go over to friendsoftom.com and you can sign up for the podcast over there. You will get directed to the proper place. We have the song contest. The theme song contest is in full effect. They got a couple entries. Hopefully we'll get to those during the program. But to start things off, for the cover of The Village Voice this week is about the mutant bike gangs of New York. Mutant bike gangs of New York is the name of the article. Tall bike clubs, live free, ride high, and don't want your stinking logo. Now, this is an article from The Village Voice. I'm sure if you go to villagevoice.com, you can stare at some pictures of people on these tall bikes. I know a guy who rides one of these tall bikes. It's a purple shirt, the guy who calls the show and is a friend. He's a Hall of Famer, actually. Hall of Famer. He rides one of these tall bikes. So here's this article on it, and we're going to go over this right now, the mutant bikes. This is from the article. They were meant to be edgy advertising, those tall bikes towering in Brooklyn Industries windows. But somebody, or some buddies, took their presence personally. The bikes, each essentially a pair of ordinary cycles stacked into a single ride 6 feet high, had been in the clothing stores for less than a week when a saboteur etched a protest in acid. Bike culture not for sale, read the runny white lettering found February 23rd on the glass at the four Brooklyn Industries outlets in Manhattan and Brooklyn. Bike culture not for sale is what it said on it. How exactly is bike culture not for sale? Bikes are for sale! Bike culture! So they put these bikes in the window of the store, these tall bikes. And they then these guys got mad because they had tall bikes in the window of a store. It says the Park Slope store's assistant manager, Mackenzie Rollins, first spotted trouble when she came into work the morning before and found someone had messed up the gate locks overnight. They looked like someone had inserted something. Maybe a screwdriver to screw them up, she says, folding a retro 80s t-shirt with a cutout neck. We had to buy new locks. And the next morning she found the graffiti. So these bike guys were mad that the store window had bikes in it, the tall bikes in a clothing store window. So bike culture is not for sale. But you know what? What is a bike? What's a bike shop then? Isn't that bike culture? They sell bikes at bike stores. Go attack a bike store. You got such a problem. You go. You go attack the store that the one on Different Strokes ran. The one, Mr. The guy from WKRP. Go attack that bike store. That guy was a child molester. He ran that bike store. He attacked Dudley in the back room. Tried to give Arnold wine. Arnold and Dudley tried to give them wine. Hey, remember that episode? It was like, Arnold, you know, over in France, they kids your age drink wine. Go attack a bike store. The man in the bicycle shop? I remember Mr. Drummond saying so shocked. So these guys who ride these modified bikes are mad that a store would dare to put bikes in the window. Woohoo, there's bikes in the window. Rawr! Nice use of your time. Yeah, there was, because we got rid of every other problem on the planet. Now we can start to worry about whether clothing stores put bikes in the window. Bike culture. What are these guys? What are they going to go to the TGIF next? Attack the wallpaper in TGIF with the guy riding the bike with the big wheel and the little wheel? Sorry, guys. It's been around for a while. But the weird bikes have been around for a while. Check the wallpaper at any crazy theme restaurant. The old-timey wallpaper. And there's a picture of this guy with a paper bag over his head. Because he doesn't want to be known he wants to keep his identity secret. It's good to see the guy on the bike doesn't want to draw any attention to himself. Guy on the bike. Yeah, I don't want you to know who I am. Don't know who I am. Yeah, maybe you don't want me to know who you are. Don't ride a 9-foot-high bike. If you don't want me looking at you. Bike culture not for sale. So these guys have enough time on their hands to get their hands on some acid to burn the windows of these stores. Great use of your time, guys. So they apparently in the mutant bikers went the speculation had just been heard. New York's leading tall bike gangs, the Black Label Bicycle Club and Chunk 666, are dedicated to fashioning so-called mutant bikes from discarded scraps and spare parts for love, not money. A web search turns up the direct email address for the Smelter from Chunk 666 New York chapter. Finally, the Smelter, who's also known as Kansas, contacts the reporter from a friend's funeral in Chicago. After mentioning that the club has talked it over, he gives the cell phone number of fellow Chunkster Marco Bon, who goes by the name Darko. So Darko here denies that he knows who did the attack on the storefront windows. But then he says, I'm definitely part of consumerist economy. He's the creative director for the Ralph Lauren website. So wait a minute. Some guy who works for Ralph Lauren is going to tell me, like some advertising guy is going to tell me what's consumerist and what's not? Business is hoping to cash in on the cachet of mutant bikes could never grasp the kinship of the clubs, Darko insists. The essence of any bike club is based on the fact that when you're riding these bikes, because they are made haphazardly, they break down. So we're always stopping and helping each other fix the bikes. That's where the camaraderie comes in. See, that's nice. That's fun. People building bikes. No problem. I support that. Everybody having fun building the bikes, riding the bikes all around. Have a good old time. Ride your 6-foot bike all over town and help each other. That's fun. That's called a hobby. Then he says, when you're riding a bike and somebody says, these bikes are great. Can I buy one? The answer has always been no, but you can make one. Make? What is this? Make one. And if they're interested, they can come to the shack, which is where they build the things, and we can build one together. You know what? Maybe I don't have time to build a bike over at the shack. Maybe I just want to buy one. No, you can't buy one. Says who? So some guy in advertising is now going to tell me what I can and can't buy? Some guy from who works for Ralph Lauren. Oh, you can't buy that. But try buying these Ralph Lauren sweaters. Please buy those. Maybe I don't think clothes shouldn't be bought. Clothes culture not for sale. Darko first learned of the tall bikes flap at Brooklyn Industries stores from a private listserv dedicated to the mutant bike clubs. He said, my feeling was, why are there tall bikes in the windows? It's so unnatural to build these bikes for any kind of profit. What? So how is it that a guy from Ralph Lauren is going to actually say that what shouldn't be sold? How dare you? I condemn Chunk 666. They got so much free time. Why do these Brooklyn mutants have so much free time riding around on their bike, having a good old time? That's fine. You want to do that? It's a party. Go have a party for the rest of your life. Ride your tall bike all day long. But don't go trying to say the tall bikes are somehow off limits. You know what? I'm going to open up a tall bike store now. That's exactly it. I'm opening a tall bike store now. I'm starting to sell tall bikes. See how these guys, I'll start putting them in Walmarts. FMU, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, who's this?
It's Purple Shirt.
It's Purple Shirt. It's one of the tall bikers. Oh, no.
When was the first time you saw a tall bike?
Saw you riding it around.
Was that the first time you saw one?
I think it might have been.
Pretty cool, right?
Well, it's very cool. I'm not denying that it's cool.
Nice.
You should be able to sell them, though.
I'm going to sell them with you.
What, are you going to start burning acid through windows just because somebody's trying to sell something?
Hey, come on, man. One bad apple in the bunch, you know?
So one bad apple hit all four businesses
I think,
in two
I think,
boroughs.
I think that's what it was.
bike culture not for sale. Model train culture not for sale. It's nerd talk.
You know, I think it's good at least that, I don't know, people are talking about bikes. People are talking about riding their bikes on the Village Voice, New York Times, now on your show.
So if
that's,
I want
that's a good thing.
So if I want to do one of these tall bike things, because the guy here, do you know who Seeley is? Do you know who Todd Seeley is?
Yes.
Are you friends with him?
No. But I know who he is.
He says...
Photographer.
Yes. He says, to use tall bikes in a Windows display seemed shallow. Tall bike gangs have a very heavy base of anti-consumerism. They live in warehouses. All their clothing could fit into a duffel bag. That's not my fault. So what do I got to run? If I want to go and buy a bike, I got to run it by these guys?
No, I don't think you have to run it by them at all.
Ooh, what do I got to make sure I put the baseball card in the spokes? Got to make sure these guys are cool with it? Are they going to throw acid in my face?
Listen, a lot of these guys are really good people, Tom.
Got to put a basket on the front? I got to worry the guy's going to dump acid on my head because I want to put a basket on my bike?
Listen, they're not going to dump acid on you. They're good people. They really are good people, and they throw wonderful events.
And they throw acid at store windows.
No, one bad apple, and I don't think it was either one of those groups.
Condemn them all!
No.
I want you to condemn them tonight.
I can't do that, Tom.
Who's Stash? Do you know Stash?
Yes.
Who's that?
I've seen him at record stores, the record fair. He's an FMU supporter. He's posted on the message board before.
You know what? Look, I'm all for the fun of it. It sounds like fun, ride a bike all over the place.
It's a lot of fun, Tom.
It sounds great.
It's really, really fun.
I support that wholeheartedly.
I'm glad you do.
But you know what I don't support?
Vandalism.
Guys trying to tell me what I can and can't do just because they got some big thrill. They're nerd club. They think they're going to set the parameters of what bike culture is.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was too bad that Brooklyn Industries chose to.
They were doing it for
window,
charity,
and I think it's too bad that somebody vandalized their window. I think both sides went a little bit too far
by putting a bike in a window.
But the thing is, these people that run Brooklyn Industries, first of all, nothing in that store is made in Brooklyn. Nothing in that store is even made in the United States.
Those bikes were.
Right. And so what, they're giving $2 off the sale of $90 bags to some program. So therefore, I mean, it's all about advertising and bettering themselves.
That's more than
somebody... the backs of somebody else's culture. I mean, what if Brooklyn Industries had a Philly Boy Roy week where they had images of Philly Boy Roy?
You want to know what?
We're making money off of that. I mean, how would you feel?
You want to know what? If Philly Boy Roy is not... Philly Boy Roy... The thing would be is how would I feel if they put a mannequin of somebody from Philadelphia in the window? I have no claim over that.
All right.
Philly Boy Roy, the kid's got claim on that.
All right. I don't know. I don't think that the bikes apparently weren't rideable. They were just standing.
That
display.
Bike.
They're a display. You know, they're ways to sell Hawk T-shirts.
So what?
Well,
it's
all
stupid.
Right, well.
You ignore it. Who cares?
Well,
I see stuff that offends me all day.
Right.
I don't go around trying to bring the people down. I try to elevate people.
Well, get a tall bike, and you'll elevate them even more.
No, I'm going to start getting my car. I'm going to put some wide fenders on my car. Start going after these tall bikes.
Hey, Tom, what's bigger, my tall bike or your car?
Well, what'll be bigger, your tall bike or my car after I hit your tall bike? I think your tall bike on its side might be not as tall as my car.
Yeah, probably wider, then.
I'm going to start going after these tall bikes. I'm going to get a little acid cannon on the front of my car. Start squirting it at their back tires.
You should come to the next event they have. They would probably enjoy it.
The next bike kill?
Yeah, the next bike kill.
Oh, you mean the...
Where they chunk castle on.
Oh, you mean the bike renaissance fair?
Right.
That's a renaissance fair for people in Brooklyn.
With the jousting?
Exactly. That's all that is. Wouldst thou like to? Why don't they have the thing? I went to a Renaissance fair once. It was the dumbest thing I ever went to.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But
you know what?
Bike kills are an awful lot of fun. They're awesome.
But you
they're amazing, these people that joust. It's absolutely amazing.
You know the difference between the people at the Renaissance fair and the people at the bike kill? People at the Renaissance fair trying to be authentic live like it's 400 years ago. They were still cleaner than the people at the bike kill.
It's probably true. Probably true.
Some dirtbag with a Salem t-shirt that he got out of a dumpster riding around on his tall bike.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
Eating out of a garbage can. You don't want your kid eating out of a garbage can.
No.
Get your son away from that.
He doesn't eat out of a garbage can.
And he never will. You wouldn't let him.
No.
Daddy's not going to let his kid eat out of a garbage can. Right?
No.
You don't want your kid being Brooklyn street filth.
No.
People in Brooklyn can't even take care of a Target. Run the Target down. You give them a nice store. They run it down. You get mugged going through the Target now. You ride your tall bike down the aisle of the Target.
That I'd like to see.
Why don't they go after Target rather than the...
That would be great. I would love to see it. I guess. I don't know. I mean, is that the...
Have you ever shopped at Target?
Sure. Target's great.
You like it, right?
You know what I love about it? I used to live in Minneapolis, so I'm familiar with Target a long, long time ago. And the great thing about them is their return policy.
Uh-huh.
I had a car stereo once, and 2 years later, I totaled my car,
mm-hmm.
and I took the stereo back, and they gave me every penny for it. It was a great,
well, that's nice.
Great return policy. Yeah, Target's great.
Now, what do you think about this with the tall bikes? In the last few years, tastemakers have begun calling on Black Label and Chunk. Rumor has it Rolling Stone and MTV have asked Black Label members to cooperate for feature stories. Only to be denied.
There is a feature coming up.
There's a movie coming out.
Yeah.
So one of these tall bike guys made a movie or
about
something.
About that culture.
Now, how do you feel about that?
The Rachel Myrick film that's on the web, is in which I am actually in, mm-hmm. as well as Jason and Megan from a bike kill 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Is an amazing film, and it was a great event. I mean, tons of photographers and videographers and film people show up at these events because it's an amazing spectacle. It really, really is.
This is what I've decided I'm going to do. I'm going to Williamsburg. I'm going to find a nice storefront. It's going to be called Tom's Tall Bikes.
I love it.
I'm going to start selling tall bikes that I'm going to have manufactured overseas. Right?
Okay, okay.
I'm going to, well, they don't have to be manufactured overseas.
In China?
Nah, we'll make them here. I don't have any purpose to make them overseas. I was just trying to taunt the tall bikers with that. I'll make the, you know, but I'll sell them. I'll sell the tall bikes. And if any of these hoodlums come around, these bike vigilantes, these bike nerds, I'm going to be on the roof. You see Dawn of the Dead?
Right.
Dawn of the Dead will be on the roof with a machine gun. Start shooting at people, try to come near my store with acid.
So this is what it's come to.
I'll gun them down, and then I'll sell their tall bikes in the store.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, take their tall bikes and then sell them to somebody else.
I'll send the tall bikes in, and I'll spray paint them. Then I'll put them for sale. What do you think about that, tall bikers? These guys are nerds.
Oh, they're a lot of fun.
No, but
great
they are
culture. It really
they're
is ner- good.
They're nerds, though.
No.
They're nerds. It's like no different than arguing over whether a Star Wars prequel is part of the culture. I refuse to acknowledge the existence of episodes 1 through 3. I refuse to acknowledge the existence of bike culture.
Oh, Tom.
You know what I'm going to do these bike guys also? They don't want somebody to represent them. They're trying to deny the media and stuff. I'm going to MySpace them is what I'm going to do. They're Friendster. I'm going to MySpace them. I'm just going to take it from them, start marketing it. You remember how MySpace crushed Friendster?
Right, right.
How, like, Friendster did it. They actually got it started.
Right.
And then MySpace all of a sudden took the same thing. and then just like made a $1 billion on it.
Right, and then
that's what I'm just going to completely co-opt bike culture. I'll be called like Bike Dude.
Now, I'll call Bike Tom.
And I'll wear like a what should I wear? Like a bandana and like crazy leather jacket. Hey everybody, I'm Bike Dude. Bike culture's so cool, and you'll never actually see me ride one of the bikes. I'll always just like talk about them.
How about get like a tall bike exercising machine? I remember you riding one of those a couple years ago for a marathon.
I did ride one of those for a marathon.
Get yourself a tall bike.
A tall bike exerciser. Maybe that we should market that to like Brooklyn gyms.
That would be good.
Like if there's like any kind of like, is there a Crunch in Williamsburg?
I'm sure there's several of them, but like, I wouldn't know because I'm riding my bike so often I don't need to go to the gym.
You ride your bike. That's how you get your exercise.
I don't need to go to the gym. I'm fit.
How many of these tall bikes do you see in an average day?
I rarely see one in it. Well, I'm looking at one right now, but
except for yours.
Okay.
How many do you see? I see one all the time. Of course you do. It's yours.
I see one a week.
You see one a week?
Yeah.
Now, what kind of things do people yell at you when you ride by on your tall bike?
How do you get on it?
Somebody just put up an idea up on the chat. Mick Tall Bikes.
Right.
What do you think about that?
You know, they'd have to raise the height of those drive-through ceilings.
No. We get McDonald's on board, start making like little toy ones go in the Happy Meals.
Okay.
Hey, here's something that somebody says. Here you go. This backs it up. Other mutant bike clubs dispense with any attempt at cloaking themselves in enigma. Skunk called from Massachusetts to talk about Skull, or the Subversive Chopper Unit Legion, a gleefully nerdy sci-fi based club whose members call their bikes ships.
You know, what about motorcycle culture?
Yeah, but you don't see some motorcycle guy getting mad when they put a motorcycle. They get mad if they use the Hells Angels logo.
Okay.
But they don't get mad about somebody taking the existence of motorcycles.
But, I mean...
Hey, man, you can't put that chopper in your window. What do they care? They're riding their motorcycle all day. They got better things to do. Get mad at what's in a store window. That's, if anything, is an example of somebody with way too much free time, it's that. You know what's getting me so mad is that bike in the window over there. Arr! I'm so mad. Arr! Yeah, nothing else bad going on in the world.
Well, why isn't the Village Voice writing about more important things, though, you know?
I have no idea. That was actually one of the most wildly inconsequential articles. It actually didn't even kind of go anywhere.
Good.
You know what I mean? It didn't even get into the issue. It was very superficial. I condemn the Village Voice for glorifying these hoodlums.
I mean, I think...
They're going to drive me to pull like a death wish move. I'm going to go get a truck. Start driving around looking for tall bike hoods.
Oh, I know where you could find them.
Like a garbage truck. What if I just get a garbage truck and I'm just like, I'm taking out the garbage. And like I put their tall bike in and I crush it. Why don't you guys get mad about other things? Don't you have more to get mad about in Brooklyn?
There's plenty to be mad about in Brooklyn.
Like what are you mad about?
Well, you know, just a block away from that Brooklyn Industry Store last week, a giant crane that's been there for... I don't know, sometime it's totally under all the development, and it's illegal, and these developers and their backroom deals with the city government, and this crane bashed through somebody's apartment and almost killed a 4-year-old little boy. And are these guys getting a fine or getting in any trouble? I mean, they're getting away with it scot-free, and these developers over here are getting away with murder. Wow. And that upsets me.
There you go. That's a real issue.
And that's on page 31 of the Brooklyn Star.
Where are your tall bike heroes now, Purple Shirt? Where are your tall bike heroes now?
Oh, boy.
I want you right now to repeat after me. I purple shirt.
I purple shirt.
A.K.A. tall bike.
A.K.A. tall bike.
Hereby on March 28th, 2006.
Hereby on March 28th, 2006.
Fully condemn.
Fully condemn.
All actions taken by bike culture.
All actions taken by bike culture.
Just repeat it.
There's a lot of good actions done by bike culture. This Friday night, for example, it's 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Critical mass, Union Square. It's good.
I like critical mass. Good. I'm all for that.
Glad to hear it. That's bike culture.
Yeah, but that's...
What about transportation alternatives? They're trying to get cars out of Central Park this summer.
Imagine
a park without cars. That hasn't been done for 100 years, probably. I mean, that's bike culture.
Hey, how am I supposed to get across
town? What about the Tour de France? Lance Armstrong, that's bike culture.
Yeah. No. Lance Armstrong, though, he didn't make that bike from a garbage dump the way these guys want it. They want Lance Armstrong to be digging through a dumpster trying to build his bike that he's going to go race.
You know, they have alley cat races with tall bikes. There's one coming up April 1st in New Haven.
You know what I'm going to do now? I'm not even going to use a car. I just decided I'm going to fight these tall bikers on foot. I'll just go me on foot. These tall bikers, I'll take on 10 of them at once. What do you think about that?
Sounds great, Tom.
I'll be completely unarmed. I'll just use my
push them over.
My hands and my feet.
Just make sure you're on the right side of that thing when it comes down.
These guys will be coming, probably swinging maces at me, made out of soup cans.
Or jousting poles. Yeah, something. Chains.
I'll defeat them with my wit.
Good.
With my suburban wit. They're soft, these bikers.
Oh, they are not soft.
No, they're soft.
They're definitely not soft.
Because they're rich kids.
I mean...
They're rich kids gone to seed. You know that's true.
There's always a few of those in every bunch.
You know these are rich kids gone to seed. They're soft. No backbone. I can take them out. I come from humble upbringing.
Why would you want to take him out? Take out this one bad guy who did that.
You rat him out right now. You know who it is.
No, I don't.
Condemn him on the radio. Condemn him.
Don't know who he or her was.
It was probably you and your son.
No. My wife shops at Brooklyn Industries.
Exactly. Oh, uh-oh.
But I think it's crap. I would never buy something from them. It's all made in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm. You know what I says? Bring it on, bike culture. You got a new enemy.
Ooh, the kid.
The kid's coming after you. Come after with your jousting pole made out of like a railing that you took off a bridge. Rich kid's gone to seed.
Hey, you got to come to the next bike kill.
I'm not.
Come on.
I think I need a fake mustache. And a voice scrambler. I mean, what am I worried about? These guys don't have radios. Right?
They have radios, sure. Doesn't everybody have computers these days?
Well, these bike guys, I guess they have to build their own computers. Computer culture, not for sale. You bought that computer. You needed to build it out of soup cans. And chicken wire. You tell your bike friends I'm coming for them. On foot. Just these two things. And right now, you know what I'm holding up?
What are you holding up?
The fists of fury.
Oof.
Nothing. I'm not even going to wear boxing gloves. Coming for you, tall bike culture. I'm the Paul Kersey of that. That was Charles Bronson's name in Death Wish.
Okay.
But I'm not going to kill anybody.
You're just going to bring them
down.
Send
them back to mommy and daddy. Go ride your tall bike back to New Canaan. Go back, past the gate. Press the button at the gate. It's me. I want to come back home. I'm so scared. Rich kids. You're right. Were you a rich kid, Purple Shirt?
No, I wasn't a rich kid. I wasn't.
What was your upbringing?
And I hate rich kids, too.
What was your upbringing?
Middle class.
Total middle class?
Out in the suburbs.
What did Dad do?
Dad worked at the soap company.
The soap company?
The soap company, yeah.
Uh-huh. Did he own the soap company?
No, he didn't.
What did Mom do?
Mom...
Homemaker?
Homemaker.
All right. Purple Shirt, you passed the test.
Sweet.
You're a good guy.
Sweet.
And right now, I want everyone in tall bike culture to know that there is a double agent in your midst. His name is Purple Shirt. He will be cataloging your actions and reporting them back to me and the NYPD.
Oh, Tom. You're too much. You're too much.
Do you think you'll have trouble at the next bike kill?
No.
Better watch out. I think you're in too deep now. You're like Donnie Brasco.
You think, huh?
You can't have it both ways, Purple Shirt.
They're good people, Tom. They're real good people. And it's too bad that one idiot had to make it all look bad.
So. Well, thank you for speaking out.
Yeah. Hey, well, thanks for talking about bike culture.
Next, I'll be talking about Lionel train culture and model trains. How I'm condemning guys who put model trains in store windows. They didn't make those little train depots and little bushes themselves. They bought those in stores. Those little figures that they got populating the train station. They didn't make those. They didn't make them out of junk.
Good night, Tom.
FMU, you're on the air.
Yo, Tom, what up, dog?
Who's this?
You know who this is.
Oh, I know who you are. You're the guy who I hung up on. FMU, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, I hate to introduce a conspiracy theory here.
Yes, go ahead real quick.
Are you willing?
Sure.
Okay, I rode by there on my 10-speed the morning after. And
okay.
The Park Slope location. And it looked more like soap than acid.
Oh, so you think that they're faking it?
I think that Brooklyn Industries is doing a little 1-2 on us.
You think so?
And they want the press.
The pub. They want the pub.
Exactly.
Now, are you scared of those tall bike guys? You on your lowly 10-speed that you probably bought at a store?
Even worse, I bought it at a garage sale.
Oh, I think that's probably the purgatory of these guys.
It's the semi-functioning bike.
Guys with nothing to do. Nothing to do. How little do you have to worry about in your life if you're going to get mad about a bike in a storefront? You got nothing else on your plate?
I don't think so. But what about the Brooklyn Industries? That doesn't make sense.
What's that?
That they soaped up their windows.
I don't know. That's a new theory. I haven't had time to digest that yet.
I'll explore. But one more thing, too.
Yes?
Before I go. It's not even tall bikers. It's these bikers on these fixed gear bikes with no brakes.
Uh-huh.
You got to watch out for them, too.
Okay.
So that's all. Thank you.
Thanks, 10-speed. Is that Jeff? You tell him we're going to have Jeff Fierzig up in a minute. He's the director of the exciting new movie, which is coming out in theaters this Friday. It's called The Devil and Daniel Johnson. We're going to hear a quick Daniel Johnson song, and then we will have Jeff Fierzig on the phone with us to tell us all about his movie. Let's hear some Daniel Johnson here on WFMU. East Orange, WXHD, Mount Hope, Worldwide, World Wide Web, WFMU.org. That was Daniel Johnson's starry entertainer from his classic Yip Jump Music. album, and I think I'm joined now by the director of the Daniel Johnston movie, The Devil and Daniel Johnston, Jeff Fierzig. Is he on the line?
He is on the line.
Oh, good heavens.
Major Tom.
That's right. How are you doing, Jeff?
Doing great.
So you are Jeff Fierzig?
Indeed. So, Tom,
yeah. Well,
what do we want to do with this time period here, live on FMU?
I think I want to talk about your movie.
All right.
I'm going to give you the straight interview.
Okay. I'm going to do my best to do the same for you.
But you can just talk. Just be Jeff.
Right on.
I know Jeff. I should let people know. So if I sound like I'm being a little cavalier with a guest, that's not the case. I have I would consider Jeff to be a friend, a good friend.
And I consider you a friend, too.
Oh, well, that's nice. So your movie's finally coming out.
Yeah, this Friday. We have The Sunshine in New York, and we also opened 5 theaters in Los Angeles.
All right. So
big weekend.
So you got one screen in New York?
One screen in New York, The Sunshine, over in the Lower East Side.
It's going to be a madhouse.
That's what I hear. The reviews are starting to hit, Tom.
So what kind of press have you started to hear now about the movie coming in?
Well, you know, it's like we live in the age of Google alerts.
Mm-hmm. So you now are getting hit every 5 minutes, I'm sure.
Yeah. Google alert is a great thing because now anything that gets written, it just gets sent to your email. It's a beautiful thing. We didn't have this in the days when Daniel Johnston was making his homemade cassettes, you know.
No. It's actually funny when you think about, I was thinking about talking about this movie and thinking about it. I've seen the movie a couple times. And it's somebody, if you think, I've known about him for almost 20 years now. For me, personally. And it's just it's a funny thing that it was so much a part of my life then. And it seems like Daniel's a story that maybe some people, the way that we seem to move with things, you live with something for a couple of years and then you kind of slide on to that next thing.
Sure.
And then you slide on to the next thing. It seems like Daniel was kind of out of the picture a little bit in a lot of people's minds.
Well, I think he was out of the picture in his own mind as well. I mean, you know, he's not well and he was in and out of hospitals. Mm-hmm. You know, and he was, let's face it, the guy was an enigma.
Yeah.
And, you know, he never toured. So us people in Hoboken, you know, that's when we all found out about him.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a voice on a tape.
Uh-huh. So is that when you got the cassettes? That was your first exposure to him?
Yeah, I got the cassettes pretty early on. Probably when I was DJing at PRB and TSR. And
throwing down some Jersey cred there for everybody.
Hey, listen, you can take the boy out of Jersey, but fill in the blank. You know, I may live in Los Angeles, but you know, I'm a Hoboken resident for life. You spent 8 years in Hoboken, you're still Jersey, right?
Well, I think I would say yes. You logged your time in South Jersey. You logged your time on the borderline there.
Now, let's give Jersey a little credit as far as the history of Daniel Johnston. You know, Austin loves to claim Daniel Johnston as its own. Let's face it, right?
Yeah.
The guy's not from Austin. He's from West Virginia. And if it wasn't for the people of Hoboken, New Jersey, and if it wasn't for the radio station WFMU, which at that point was broadcasting out of
East Orange.
East Orange. You know, a lot of us never would have experienced Daniel Johnston.
Yeah, and Daniel has other ties to, the station has other ties to Daniel's exciting story also, which we can touch on as we keep moving through this. So now you are a fan, you've been a fan. At what point does the idea of turning this into something dawn on you?
Well, we have to give total credit. It's a story I've told many times over the last few months. The inspiration came in the year 1990, all because of a WFMU radio broadcast. Now, I understand you guys actually occasionally, as an anniversary, rebroadcast this.
That was the Nick Hill?
Yeah, it was the Nick Hill show. And as legend has it, Daniel led us all to believe that he was broadcasting right from the mental hospital in West Virginia. And I believe it was after he threw that old lady from church out the window. And I remember FMU was building this broadcast up. It was like for 1 week, you know, we're tuning in this Sunday, and it's going to be the one-hour Daniel Johnston radio special. I remember everybody in Brooklyn, everybody in Hoboken, everybody in New York was glued to their radios. It was a big day in broadcasting. And that broadcast happened, and I just remember for 1 hour sitting in my Hoboken apartment, and my mouth was just agape. It was, well, people should all hear this. It should probably be rebroadcast. I mean, Daniel, he interviewed himself in multiple voices. His obsession with fame, his obsession with the devil. He performed elaborate comedy skits, playing all the characters, including the female characters. And he improvised songs. He recorded a hit single that afternoon with Yola Tango.
Yeah.
His version of Speeding Motorcycle. I just remember as soon as that song ended, I said, oh my God, that's not only should be a record or a single, that's a hit single. I said that's like the new Jonathan Richman Roadrunner when that got laid down. And then before you know it, there was a single came out. And at the end of the broadcast, he took calls from the listening audience, and I called in. I talked to Daniel on the FMU airwaves, and that's the first time I ever talked to the guy.
And from that was when you kind of realized, that's when you were hooked.
I was already hooked on his music and art and his comedy for the few years previous to that broadcast. But after the broadcast was over, I thought that broadcast was a movie. That was like the greatest radio drama I had ever heard. Mm-hmm. It was much, much scarier than the Orson Welles War of the Worlds broadcast. Now, you've heard that, right?
I've heard both of them, yes.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. I've listened to that Welles broadcast, and I'm a big Orson Welles fan. I don't know how anybody believed that was real. But, you know, Daniel's broadcast on FMU, forget about it. That was too real. And I think he buried Orson Welles that day. I really do.
Well, and then you realized that this was a much more fertile subject.
Oh, my God. It answered, like, I had all these theories about the guy. If you listen to his tapes, you know, he'd released his mom yelling at him on the tapes between the songs. You know, we all knew that.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote so beautifully about unrequited love, about that girl named Lori who married the Undertaker. You know, I thought he made up Lori as a character. A lot of songwriters make up, insert the girl's name and write a song about a girl, right?
Sure.
I definitely had a theory that Lori was a made-up character. I don't know what you thought.
Well, I had kind of heard the story before I was listening that closely.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, at first I said, maybe he made her up. But anyway, it turns out that Lori was real and she married the Undertaker, and he got a lot of mileage out of that girl, really. Hundreds of songs. But anyway, you know, that broadcast, he proved his comedy genius.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything else he had done, the unrequited love songs, writing so beautifully about his manic depression in songs, songs like I Had Lost My Mind, songs like A Monkey in a Zoo, which he also played on the FMU broadcast, that song, mm-hmm. Like a Monkey in a Zoo. He did a song that we'd never heard before and have never heard since on the FMU broadcast. It's called Spinning Globe, where he actually blows up the world. You know, it's a really beautiful apocalyptic song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anyway, I really thought, and I still do to this day, that 1 hour of radio, I mean, it changed my life. I knew right then that was the movie I was going to make. It was going to be the FMU broadcast, and I had a title for it. I was going to call it Yip Jump Movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just going to be the broadcast with visuals. And, you know, in many ways, that's what The Devil and Daniel Johnston really is. It still is that broadcast come to life as a film.
Sure. I should say we have Jeff Fierzig, who's the director of The Devil and Daniel Johnston, on with us. Movie comes out on Friday over at the Sunshine and in selected theaters throughout Los Angeles.
Yeah, and then it opens nationwide, starts rolling out the following weeks. I think right now it's booked in 80 theaters around the country already. And so
that'll come out through April.
Yeah, a lot of theaters. Matter of fact, they already added like 18 theaters that we just found out today. So
that's fantastic.
As the press keeps coming in, they're adding theaters, which is great. We had a great Village Voice review today, which was really nice.
So when did work in earnest begin on the Daniel Johnston movie? When did you really start to shoot some film?
Well, I didn't start shooting anything till I think it was 2000. But I got to tell you, you can't do any work without having a concept or an idea, and I think the work really happened in a flash right after the FMU broadcast. And I'm not trying to over-exaggerate this because I'm on FMU right now. I've told 100 journalists this in the last few months that's where the idea and the inspiration came from. It's the truth. But I started collecting clippings from back then. You know, I had all the tapes, and I would, there was articles, the Village Voice, the New York Press were covering Daniel's real life, if he crashed a plane or whatever he would do, or throw a woman out a window. You know, this stuff was being played out in the media and certainly in fanzines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was collecting it all. There was a great fanzine called Chemical Imbalance that a guy named Mike McGonigal used to put out. He now does a fanzine called Yeti. And he wrote I got to give him credit. He wrote this definitive Village Voice piece, and he also wrote an incredible multi-page article with art in Chemical Imbalance back in the day. He was the first guy, I think, to cover Daniel.
That was probably the first place I saw the artwork. Mm-hmm. Was on that cut. Well, yeah, it was on a cover of one. I remember seeing some of his stuff.
As a matter of fact, it's so funny because that period of time had such a big effect on me because the artwork of the Devil and Daniel Johnston movie poster is actually right from the Chemical Imbalance fanzine from back then. I took it out of there. It was such a powerful piece, where his obsession with fame and the devil—it's just—and his madness is all right there in this art. Now that art's the poster. So really, FMU and Chemical Imbalance deserve a lot of credit for inspiring this.
Mm. Well, I guess people here are glad you're giving props to FMU.
Well, listen, FMU, whether it did or didn't, remains the greatest radio station in America. There's no question about it.
Ball.
And, it's thank God it's on the web because I'm here in California. I'm stranded. And now I can listen to it online. It's great.
Yeah.
So, I feel like I'm home.
Well, that's fantastic. Except for the only thing you're missing would be the lowly Hoboken cannoli to make you feel like you got the whole package.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
So you started shooting in 2000.
Yeah.
How was the family, who did you approach to get this off the ground? Did you go to did you go to Daniel's parents? Did you go to Jeff Tartikoff, his manager? Who did you talk to open the door?
I got to be honest, it was Jeff Tartikoff, who was Daniel's ex-manager, he was Stress Records. He was this cassette label that the guy we'd send our $5 off to get, one of, I believe, there's 9 cassettes. And he was sort of a pen pal. Once again, pre-internet, everything happened through the mail. And Jeff was the keeper of the flame. And, a lot of people had knocked on Jeff's door over the years with DV cameras and had wanted to make a Daniel Johnston film. And Jeff never opened up those floodgates. Because if Jeff gave you the nod, Jeff gave you approval, there was a lot of people out there with their own Daniel Johnston archives. Videotapes, films, audio cassettes, art, letters, just so much stuff that went into the research Jeff, gave the approval, and that's what he did. I was down there in Austin one day, and I met with Jeff, and Jeff agreed to make the film, and he then introduced me to Daniel backstage after a concert in Austin, and Daniel immediately said yes as well, and then I went to the family, actually.
And the parents were they were down in Texas at that point?
Yeah, they were living in Waller, Texas, which is where they still live. That's about an hour outside of Austin, and it's also an hour from Houston. Waller is really, it's like fast food and God. I mean, there's nothing there but fast food and God. It's God's country. and that's where they live. It's a lot of farms.
Yeah. So that's and now you're doing a movie like this. I guess around 2000, you realize that it's not the 70s when you do you're working on the song remains the same and you're kind of the only game in town doing stuff. It's like now you're up against VH1 kind of barfing out two of these bio documentaries, whatever you want to call them, that they did, Behind the Music and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're up against this sea of just content, of people just, documenting people's lives here and there, and they're just doing it on the cheap and just do, but it's still the same. To some people, it's all equivalent.
Well, content is really too high a compliment for what you're describing. I mean, I think of it as interference or mm-hmm. noise. It's just clogging up everybody's, attention span and brain. That if you're going to make something like this film, mm-hmm. or like what Terry Zwigoff did with Crumb, it's just a little tougher to break through because of all the other noise out there.
Yeah. Now, I mean, now how do you? I mean, obviously you distance yourself from that because you're not cranking stuff out in an editing bay up at VH1, just kind of assembling things on a deadline. But how do you distance yourself from that? Just so that people realize that this is just not another one of those.
I got to tell you, I don't really watch that stuff, to be honest with you. And I don't think about that stuff. I mean, I was just...
But a lot of people do think about that stuff as...
I wasn't thinking about what other people think about, to be honest with you. I was just obsessed with the idea that, in 2000, when Daniel emerged at the Knitting Factory in New York, and actually toured the world a couple times... I was at this show at the Knitting Factory. It was standing room only, sold out. I've never seen Daniel Johnson perform live. And mark my words, I was there with some friends. I was there with Hamish Kilgore from The Clean and Lisa Siegel. And I got to tell you, there wasn't an eye in that house that didn't have tears in them when this guy played, because that voice came out. And he had all these new songs. And they were very different, but they were prophetic. I mean, he was like a prophet. And then I knew, I was like, wow, this guy lived, and he has a third act, and it's time to tell his story. It wasn't time to tell his story back in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
It really, there was no ending to his story. But anyway, I really made the film because I was inspired.
Yeah,
I actually think his tragic journey is very inspirational. It was really funny. I got interviewed the other day from a 22-year-old woman, a DJ up at Berkeley. She didn't know who Daniel Johnson was. And, I'm 41 now. I don't know how old you are. You're probably, 40 now?
Maybe I'm younger than that.
Okay. Well, anyway, this 22-year-old girl never heard Daniel Johnson. She saw the film, and she went home, and she does what everyone does. She Googled him and saw, oh, my God, there's hundreds of pages about this guy. She downloaded her songs. It's a lot easier to get this now, right? Mm-hmm. You can download it. You don't have to send your $5 off to Jeff Tartikoff in the mail and wait, a week or so for him to hand make that tape and glue it for you. Anyway, she downloads her songs, and she's sitting in her dorm room up at Berkeley with her roommate who did not see the film. And she says to me, we were listening to this music. I think they were listening to Hi, How Are You? Or something from Yip Jump Music, or maybe it was from something from Songs of Pain. And she told me, she says, we sat there and we were crying. And I said, wow, it's really beautiful. What song were you crying to? And I think she said it was like a monkey in the zoo. And I said, wow, I cried to that song too when I first heard it. And, that speaks for itself. I mean, it's just touching people. And anyway, I thought his story and his life journey was inspirational because he was like Kerouac. He went on the road. He ran away on a moped and joined a carnival. And he was a carny. And then this other girl, this is like last week also, this other girl comes up to me, and she saw the film, and she says, she's 25. She says to me, oh, my God, Daniel's the real Bob Dylan, she says to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
At this point, people are seeing more in the film that I even know about, right?
Uh-huh.
She says, he didn't make up his biography. She says, when Dylan came to New York, he says he was a carny and traveled through the West. Daniel really did it, she says to me, right? And I was like, wow, I never even thought of that. And I guess she just saw that Scorsese documentary,
Yeah.
And I forgot about that. I never thought about that aspect that Dylan made up his biography, that he really was, you know, Robert Zimmerman from Hibbing, Minnesota, and made up a lot of stories when he showed up in Greenwich Village, you know?
Sure, yeah. That...
But I always saw the parallel that that when Dylan showed up in Greenwich Village during the folk explosion, you know, within a matter of weeks, he captured everybody's imagination and sort of became the scene. You know, Daniel did the exact same thing in Austin back in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
He really captured everyone's imagination in the most unique way because, you know, he was working at McDonald's, and he was McDonald's most famous employee. And, you know, if you were a hip Austin musician or a pretty girl, you'd get a little surprise in your sack with your burger and fries. You'd open it up, and there was a handmade tape from Daniel Johnston. The guy invented viral marketing. Anyway, I've heard a million people tell me the story down in Austin that that's how they found out about Daniel Johnston. Now, can you imagine?
By getting a tape in a McDonald's bag.
Right. And, you know, if the tape wasn't any good, I'm sure they would have tossed it with half of their half-eaten cheeseburger or whatever.
Yeah.
But the fact is they went home and played these tapes. And, you know, within a matter of weeks, the whole Austin scene in the 80s were covering this guy's songs, the kid from McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tape of Daniel Johnston that's not in the movie. That, you know, I've heard hundreds of hours of his tapes, and it's interesting. He says to his best friend Dave Thornberry, he says, "Dave, you know, it's almost too much. I almost can't take it. The whole town they're covering my songs. There's more bands and more artists in Austin, Texas, covering my songs than Charles Berry, than Chuck Berry." And I'm saying to myself, wow, you know, in like 1983, I can imagine that a lot of Austin bands are covering Chuck Berry, you know?
Yeah.
And they probably still are, actually. That said a lot, you know. It's like, obviously, this music was speaking to people.
Yeah, and it really, for you know, it's funny you say him, you left out him talking in the movie. And I should say we have Jeff Fierzig, the director of The Devil and Daniel Johnston, which comes out this Friday at the Sunshine in L.A., and will be in your city very soon if you don't live in either of those two cities. As you talk about Daniel saying things, and the way the movie's structured is he was documenting his whole life. It seems like he was documenting his life in anticipation of this movie, seemingly. Of having these things tell his story.
Yeah, it's incredible. No exaggeration. You know, you've seen the movie, Tom.
Yeah,
I'd say it's unprecedented.
I mean, like, how many hours? How many hours of tape is there of Daniel recording himself just living his life?
You know, I never put a grand total on it, but there literally are hundreds of tapes, and I transcribed them all. And you got to figure they're 90-minute tapes. That's 45 minutes a side. I never did a grand total. I probably should do that, you know? And I digitized them and transcribed them. And, you know, that's why the film took 4.5 years to make it. And I got to tell you, they're endlessly fascinating because they're not just songs. I mean, the guy, he recorded audio diaries. He records, you know, hours of his mom yelling at him.
Mm-hmm.
One of his favorite subjects, very humorous. Family arguments. He had that little Radio Shack suction cup that you would get for $5. And he would record telephone conversations with family and friends that, you know, did not know they were being recorded.
Uh-huh.
Those are really fascinating. And then, of course, you know, audio cassette letters to friends. I don't know about you. Have you ever sent an audio cassette letter to your friends?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people had these. And, you know, people in Hoboken had them. You know, they gave me tapes. Everybody saved their tapes. And everybody's got letters, audio letters from Daniel Johnston. You know, some were recorded from Austin, somewhere from the mental hospital. The tapes are incredible, and he recorded his own arrest at the Statue of Liberty. You know, he was drawing hundreds of Christian fish in Lady Liberty's staircase, and then when he gets onto Liberty Island, when he was in Hoboken for his sessions that year in 1988, he was arrested, but he records his own arrest. This guy was documenting his whole life since he was about 13, I'd say. We don't have that in, you know, Van Gogh. You couldn't make a film about Van Gogh like this because, you know, there's no material. You couldn't make a film about John Lennon like this because the material doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But, you know, Daniel was obsessed with documenting his life. He also made Super 8 films.
Sure, which some of the stuff that it's in the movie is amazing to just see how funny and, I mean, he's got like the cuts going, and he's got, I mean, and this is just a guy shooting it, you know, solo.
Yeah.
You know, just, and he's really, he's got scenes laid out. He's got, you know.
Yeah, these are elaborate productions. You know, the guy's like 13 years old, right? First of all, let's just get something straight. You know, making this film, I didn't know Daniel Johnston made Super 8 millimeter films. These are not just home movies. Nobody knew this, you know? So I found those rotting away in a closet. They were being eaten by mold, those films. And, you know, we knew he recorded his mom yelling at him because he released those recordings, but we didn't know he made films about his mom yelling at him. So I found this film. It's called It Must Be Monday.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like Peter Sellers in Dr. Strangelove. He's playing himself and his mom in drag. You know, he's got the wig on and the rolling pin and the house coat. And he's directing himself. You know, I mean, Peter Sellers didn't direct Strangelove. Kubrick did. In this case, Daniel's not only playing himself, but he's directing himself. And it's flawless. I mean, you know, I've seen a lot of student films. I've seen my own student films. You know, Daniel Johnston's are superior. And they're funny. They're like, it's like Chaplin or Keaton or Jerry Lewis. They're really funny films, you know?
Yeah, and this is a 13-year-old.
Yeah, and then at 13, he's making these films. He's having art gallery shows in his high school and recording the gallery reactions. He learned at a young age like how to shock people. So he was drawing eyeballs all over the high school and learning how to get a reaction. And he used all these ideas that he learned as a kid throughout his life, how to shock and get a reaction and get your attention. And, mm-hmm. and it's really, it's masterful.
So when, he's a young guy growing up in West Virginia. He's clearly just overflowing with ideas and talent.
Mm.
And but he's also got this other pressure, which is his parents are kind of, it was a pretty strict religious family.
His mom, well, his whole family, they're Church of Christ, which is, you know, they're right-wing fundamentalist Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And
how was his artistry fitting or not fitting into their lifestyle?
You know, it's a tough call. I think they actually were very proud of his art when he was young because he would get a mural commission for the school, for instance, or he would do the high school yearbook drawing. So they were really proud of his art, and actually his brothers and sisters are very talented as well. One of them teaches art and one of them teaches music. And they're a very, very bright, intellectual family. They just happen to be fundamentalists. So, you know, I think they're not guilty of anything. I mean, a lot of families would tell their kid, you know, if you want to have a music career or an art career, you know, that should just be a hobby. You go get a real job, go to school. I mean, that's not uncommon.
No.
But, you know, I guess rock and roll took, when he was in high school, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll were on his mind, like a lot of kids in high school, and that's certainly not Church of Christ, you know?
Yeah.
And not that he was getting any sex, he certainly wasn't, but, you know, he wanted a girlfriend, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, rock and roll took over. Elvis Costello, the Beatles, huge obsessions. And he ran away on a moped, bought a moped and ran away and joined that carnival.
We have Jeff Fierzig, who's the director of The Devil and Daniel Johnston, on the phone with us. The movie comes out on Friday in New York and L.A. And one thing that I guess is something that plays into WFMU is it's that line where you have an artist who has you know, troubles, mental problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that it's that line between where somebody is so naked and honest through the fact that maybe they don't have the same shields up that you know somebody like a quote normal person would have up, you know, like somebody who's worried about their standing in society and would just get freaked out about letting their guard down and all, you know, and I say normal in quotes. There's the line between that being completely fascinating to see somebody open themselves up and be completely naked, and where I guess where exploitation and where the, you know, the like the carnival aspect of things enters the picture. And I mean, I see that here on the station where certain records get played by people who are clearly, you know, they have problems. And it's the line between people laughing at those people and really just admiring just a human being opening themselves up to a level that most people would never open themselves up to. It's just like, where does that play in to Daniel's, the way people perceive Daniel and into what you had to juggle with this movie? Because Daniel, he's played on bills where, you know, where I thought they were kind of a little bit in the circusy freak show thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I've been asked this quite a bit recently, so I've had some time to think about it.
And there's guys like Wesley Willis Wesley Willis just makes me sad because he clearly is. I mean, I never got any joy from any music that Wesley Willis made because it just was just depressing to me, and I felt that people were just trotting him out there to have a laugh because there's a big fat black guy playing a cheap keyboard. You know, just if you could talk about that, because it's something that actually reflects on this station. You know, a lot of that comes from this place, even.
Sure. Well, you know, it's a shame that that Daniel Johnston got tagged a few years ago with this term outsider music, which somehow came into vogue. And, you know, like the New York Times had picked up on that. And, you know, it is a shame because I actually am a very, very big fan of outsider art. And as you see in The Devil and Daniel Johnston, and what Daniel Johnston will actually tell you, is that Daniel Johnston is not an outsider artist or an outsider musician. He's actually the ultimate insider. You know, an outsider artist does not go to art school and study the history of art and know all about Van Gogh and Duchamp and things like that. That's just not how it works. Just because you're mentally ill certainly does not make you an outsider artist. You know, I read this great, great book called Touched with Fire by a woman named Kay Redfield Jameson. And she chronicles, you know, the history of manic depression throughout all the great writers, poets, painters, sculptors, you know, artists throughout history, and, you know, for whatever reason, they all shared the same thing with Daniel. They suffered from manic depression. And during their manic highs, they would create their masterpieces, you know, and in Daniel's case, it was Yip Jump music, perhaps. And they would often self-medicate, just like Daniel, or go off their meds. And Daniel fits into that. And, you know, I never, ever... I tried not to pay attention to that. It was unfair that Daniel got trotted out on some of those bills with the Wesley Willis because they just don't belong together. You know, there's not 150 artists around the world, including even recently people like Tom Waits and Beck and the Flaming Lips and Mercury Rev, that have covered Wesley Willis songs, but they have covered Daniel Johnston songs. I don't know anybody actually who's covered a Wesley Willis song. So I do have to answer that question at Q&As around the country occasionally. But I think that the fact that Daniel's work is spreading around the world through osmosis with no corporate agenda and all these great artists are paying tribute to him, I think it speaks for itself. And as far as listening to the music, I think you summed it up beautifully. It's like it's just raw. It's raw beauty, and, you know, there's no warning label when you put on Pet Sounds on that album cover. There's no warning label that says, you know, the music you're about to listen to was recorded by somebody who's bipolar, you know. No, you just pop on God Only Knows, and you just bask in the beauty, and that's what you do with Daniel Johnston when you listen to a song like, you know, True Love Will Find You in the End. And there's no warning label on, you know, on a Madcap Laughs or Barrett or early Pink Floyd. You know, you listen to the beauty of Syd Barrett. And I really believe that that's what you should do with Daniel Johnston.
Okay. Well, that's it. Just, I mean, somebody on that, we have a chat going on, and somebody says that we're being mean to Wesley Willis. I actually think...
I'm not being mean to him.
I actually think, I personally, I think people who are being mean to Wesley Willis are the people who who were pretending he was a rock star and kind of pumping the poor guy up and kind of letting him, you know, it just, you know, at his expense. To me, that's the that's being mean to somebody.
You know, I got to be honest, I've never heard a Wesley Willis record, but I did see one show, and I got to tell you, talk about, it was just tragic and sad. It was tragic and sad seeing Wesley Willis on the stage. I wasn't even forming an opinion about the music, and it was really tragic and sad seeing these people in this audience go there to see a freak show. I certainly was not there to see a freak show. I was there to see Daniel Johnston perform some beautiful love songs, you know? And I was subjected to something else, something that I just don't take part in, you know? And I felt really, I felt uncomfortable in ways I can't even really describe, to be honest with you, because I don't know, I don't understand those people, and I don't understand what Wesley Willis was doing up there, you know? So I don't know. I'm not the expert on this.
Yeah. Well, that just bums me out, and it just, it's something, it's an unfortunate part of when you, with this stuff, when somebody's, you're dealing with somebody who, like you said, gets kind of stuck with the outsider art.
Well, you know, a good thing has happened very recently, and this had nothing to do with the film. It was basically, you know, the New York Times, which picked up on this outsider art, outsider music thing, and made Daniel like the poster boy for the movement about 2 years ago. They just did a big piece on Daniel because the Whitney Biennial just stepped in and selected Daniel, and that's one of the, you know, really basically it's the highest honor in art in America that an artist can have, is to be selected by the Whitney Biennial, and Daniel's art was in there, and he came to the Biennial 2 weeks ago, and I saw a great photograph of him and Thurston Moore, and I believe it was Art Forum. And that's just incredible, because, you know, it was only a year and a half ago Daniel would be at perhaps the CBGB Gallery. So anyway, his art is now in, at the Clementine Gallery. There's a great show going on in Chelsea right now. It actually blew my mind. It has a piece that goes back to high school, and I understand that MoMA is looking to buy this piece. And I'm saying to myself, well, I guess he's not really an outsider artist. I mean, how many artists that create art maybe in grammar school or high school get that their art perhaps, you know, shown in maybe, you know, in the Museum of Modern Art? You know, that I think that says it all right there. You know, and he just showed in Paris a two-man show with Art Crum. And his gallery shows all over the world now. And I think his art is his second act in life. And I think it's just incredible that he's lived to see this happen. You know, Van Gogh never got to see a painting sold. Daniel Johnston, who set out to be a great artist, set out to be a fine artist, is actually seeing his art, which was like, you know, $125 a few weeks ago. It's now like $3,000-$4,000 a pop. It's just incredible. And the film's not out yet.
Yeah.
Let's give the guy his due. What can I tell you?
Yeah,
he's worked hard. He's a real artist. He's pumped out thousands of pieces, and he's disseminated this art all over the world in the most unique way. I mean, it's very hard to get your art seen, you know, or your music heard, as you know. It's not easy, and this guy's done it. You know, even with his condition and his disability, he's somehow cut through how we started this conversation, cut through the noise, you know, the interference. And if it's touching people, you know, that's a real emotion. We can't take that away from people. People, I think, you know, when I hear that music, it sounded like fresh oxygen to my ears. You know, it's insert whatever. It could be Coldplay. It could be whatever they're pumping out this week that they want you to buy by the millions. That's the stuff that makes my skin crawl. Do you know anybody who ever cried to a Coldplay song? Like broke down and just started weeping?
No, I don't.
I don't either.
Hey, if anybody has any questions for Jeff, they can call 201-209-9368.
Hey, I'm not looking to pick on Coldplay. You know that.
I know. You're not gunning for Coldplay.
Nah.
You don't want to step into that ring, probably, actually.
No.
I don't think you want to go up against Gwyneth Paltrow's husband.
No.
No. Now, something that you, we have Jeff Fierzig here with us, the director of Devil and Daniel Johnston, which comes out this Friday. Just like 4 years you spent making this thing. Now, just what was the, from your end, Like, what kind of commitment is that? Is that, like, you were doing this. This was not funded by a studio.
No. This is, I mean, this is the contemporary independent film, if there was such a thing anymore.
Uh-huh.
This is it.
So this was all you kind of...
Well, you know, I don't want to take too much credit financially because I did not pay nearly the bulk of it. It was my producer, Henry Rosenthal, who deserves the credit for that. He's the one who put up this money. And it was quite an expensive documentary. So,
and he for people who don't know, he's in his second act,
sure,
so to speak. He's one of the most legendary punk guys, like, and rock guys, not even just punk. He was the drummer for Crime.
Sure.
He was Hank Rank.
Hank Rank of Crime, Hotwire My Heart fame, which, you know, Sonic Youth famously covered, and then was a big inspiration to the other great band from Liverpool, Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Hank was on the front lines. What can I tell you? They were San Francisco's first punk band.
So it's you and Hank, or Henry, as he might not like to be called now.
Oh, he likes to, okay. He'll answer, right, to Hank Rank.
Okay. Yeah. It's the two of you, pretty much, just trudging all over the country,
mm-hmm,
making this movie kind of out of pocket, so to speak.
Yeah, well, it was us and, you know, about a 5 or 6 man crew, because we're shooting, you know, super 16mm and, you know, carrying lights and sound, you know, and there's a lot of gear to schlep, what can I tell you? It's not a little DV camera.
Yeah. And I think
it's expensive.
And that's what I'll say. That is one of the things that I think I was actually trying to get at before. That's the first thing that I think separates this from any of the other stuff that's on TV and stuff. It's, first of all, it's shot. This is an actual movie. This is not a, like, it's shot on film and it's beautiful to look at.
Thank you.
It's not a DV movie, which, I mean, I have no problem with that either. But
neither do I.
This isn't that, and this is beautiful, and it looks great as a movie. So it's I think that separates it from the pack a little bit too. And look, this guy walked away with the best director at Sundance for a documentary.
This is true.
They just don't throw that around. They don't give those out in the popcorn buckets.
Well,
they're not dropped into McDonald's.
You basically
bag.
Sent
they're
me
not...
off to Sundance. I can't remember. You had a great line before we got on that plane. What did you had a? Can you remember that line?
I think I was telling you to just. I don't know what was it. It was something about.
You saw it as some sort of like a showdown or something.
Just to go get them. I was like telling you to go get them.
Yeah, you like the competitive aspect,
exactly,
of these.
Exactly. You were
festivals.
In the ring. I think I was talking about you being in the ring.
Yes.
And you. And you did it.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I appreciated the humor of the competition that you like to bring to this, but
uh-huh.
I swear I did not make this film to compete with anybody.
No, of course not.
No. I just made it because I really felt like I needed to tell this story.
Yes.
So, you know, back to Hank Rank's Deep Pockets, you know. Well, that's a funny story of how he financed the film.
Let's hear it.
Here we go. Hank Rank's dad... You know, Hank Rank's from Ohio, was an early art collector, and he bought. He was at the first Andy Warhol show in Los Angeles with the famous Andy Warhol soup cans. I believe only 3 soup cans sold that day. One of them went to Dennis Hopper. Another soup can went to Henry Rosenthal's dad, and I'm not sure who bought the third soup can, but the rest of them, and I think there was something like 20 of them. Did not sell. I don't know exactly what Hank Rank's dad bought Andy Warhol's soup can for, but, you know, it had to be somewhere in the low hundreds, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that soup can hangs on Hank Rank's wall to this day in his office, right next to his two-headed calf and his Howard Stern doll. And it's a good company there. And I said, Hank, you know, we started spending a lot of money on this film. We didn't set out to spend a lot of money on the film. It just snowballed, you know, because what we were getting was, we felt, really good. Anyway, Hank had to, at a certain point, decide, hey, do we take other investors on? What do we do? And he decided, you know what? I don't want to hear anybody interfering with this film. I don't want anybody telling you what to cut out, what to put in. He goes, we're going to do this on our own, and I'll just pay for it. And he's not rich, but he just has his soup can. So I said, Hank, you know what? That's great. And if we lose all our money, you could sell the soup can, and you'll still eat, and your kids will go to college, and, you know, it won't be the end of the world. But anyway, so we tell everybody that Hank Rank leveraged his Andy Warhol soup can, which is a pepper pot, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the film got made.
People, desperate times, calling for desperate measures.
You know, he felt like art makes art. This is an art film we're going to make. And his dad was an investor in art, and so is Hank Rank.
I love it. Hey, we got a couple calls here. Are people calling? Sure. 201-209-9368. Let's get the first one on here. FMU, you're on the air with Jeff Fierzig, director of The Devil and Daniel Johnston.
Hey, hi, how are you?
Hey, who's this?
This is Evan from Montclair.
Hey, Evan, how you doing?
Good, good. It's funny you should bring this all back to today. I met my wife, and the night we met, she showed me some of these homemade cassettes that Daniel had.
Uh-huh.
And she said, you know, and I was a filmmaker at the time, and she said, you should make, you know, this would be a great documentary. And the thing that made me not want to do it is that I didn't want to, I was always already a big fan of Daniel Johnston.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to share it with anybody. It was one of these proprietary things where, like, I don't want this guy becoming sort of, like, co-opted by, you know, the movies and by VH1 and that kind of thing. And I, for years, she used to, like, say, you should do a documentary about this guy. And I did. And now I'm listening to you, and part of me is, like, I'm glad I'm finally going to get to see a movie like this. But the other part of me is, like, you know what? I don't want this guy to become commercialized, I guess. So, you know, that's the way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever find that was something that you had this dilemma with?
I got to be honest with you. I don't think it's possible, even if this film is a huge success. I mean, it's just like R. Crumb. I don't think it's possible for Daniel Johnston to become necessarily a commercial entity. I just don't think it's possible. You know?
I mean,
and, you know, although I, you know, his music, Speeding Motorcycle, was recently featured in a Target commercial. So that happened before I made the film.
But, you know, I guess the example is like Nick Drake. Nick Drake was another musician I loved, and, you know, was one of those people I wanted to share with people, yet I didn't want him to become popular, and all of a sudden I see him on a Volkswagen commercial, and then it's like, it's no longer my little secret. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know. I think I have a little kid now, and it's like, you got to learn to share. What can I tell you?
No, I completely understand. But the ironic thing to come full circle is my wife's cousin emailed me today saying, I worked on this documentary, and it's coming out this weekend, and you should go see it, and it turns out it's your movie.
Well, great.
Yeah, I guess he's one of your PAs or an AP or somebody on that.
Oh, really? Well, that's great. You know, I think it's going to play in Montclair eventually because someone told me that there's a poster up there.
I saw a poster there months ago.
So I assume that means that they'll be showing the film. But for right now, if you're in Montclair, which isn't that far from the city, I guess you have to go down to the Sunshine. So. Well, thanks for your call, and I hope you enjoy the film.
Yeah, thanks.
We got Jeff Fierzig on right now, director of The Devil and Daniel Johnston. We got him for another 7 minutes, and then he's a very busy man. He's got to go. I think he's going to be on Jimmy Kimmel tonight.
Hey, Tom, is this the most serious interview that's ever been on your show?
Is this?
Yeah.
It's up there.
Okay, all right.
We're top 5%. You know, kind of topping out there.
Okay.
But it's fine. I want people to know about this movie. I'm not going to...
I appreciate that.
I'm not here to goof around. It's not comedy time right now.
You know, you probably might want to mention the film is actually very, very funny. Daniel Johnston is funny.
It is funny. It is a very funny movie. And the one thing about the movie that's kind of touching is in a weird way how it's... The story of Daniel Johnston is a kind of a tragedy for so many people around him who actually have to live with Daniel Johnston. But Daniel Johnston himself seems to look at his life as an adventure and something that he sees, you know, he's seeing a lot of the humor in it.
Yeah, I mean, no exaggeration. He was funny. He is funny. The film gets a lot of laughs. I've seen it play all over the world now at festivals, and it gets a lot of tears too. So, but the guy is, you know, the guy is funny.
It's good stuff. I support it.
You got another call there, Tom?
Mike is screening people out. I guess we got the crackpots calling tonight. It's 201-209-9368. Let's get some legit callers here.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, one thing in the movie is Daniel himself is not a big talker about himself in present day.
That's an understatement. Daniel Johnston was an enigma when I started the film, and he remains an enigma in his own film. He's not interviewed in his own film. I like that. Because why? Unlike R. Crumb, he cannot host his own film. Unlike Mark Borchardt in that great documentary American Movie,
yeah,
he cannot host his own film.
Sure, he kind of it would be things would be a little slow moving, I would guess.
Well, I don't think it'd be a film anybody would like to watch, because I filmed him for days and days and hours, and you know, he doesn't remember a lot of his own history, and he doesn't tell it very well. But he gave us something better. He gave us those audio cassettes of his life in the moment. So when he's diagnosing himself with manic depression out of the DSM-4 psychology manual, you know, he records it, you know. His mom yelling at him, phone calls from the mental hospital. He wanted to be a spokesperson for Mountain Dew, for instance. And he wrote a bunch of jingles. You get to hear one of them in the film. He wrote a great jingle for Mountain Dew. If that would have happened, I think Daniel Johnston would have sold a lot of Mountain Dew.
He was, and he was sending those tapes to the Pepsi Corporation.
Yeah.
Kind of from the hospital.
Well, he sent it to his manager, Jeff Tartikoff, who then forwarded them. Daniel would manage the manager. You know, we should probably tell people that Daniel is not an idiot savant. And he's not naive. He's actually the wizard behind his own curtain. And he exploited his own mental illness, which is what you see in the film. And that makes him even more of a genius. He's always the smartest person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
He just suits his legend to exploit his own mental illness. He understood that was a hook. I have tapes of him talking about that he would cut off his own ear. So it's very revealing.
But he still is somebody who's fighting mental illness that he can't control also. He can have an awareness of it to a degree, but he's also, there's something bigger that he clearly can't control as well.
Well, he would, at a certain point, his mania, his manic phase would actually get out of control. And, you know, that was the tragic parts of the movie, which, of course, you'll have to go see to feel. But that's when he would hurt himself and hurt other people. And yeah, at that point he was out of control, no question.
Yeah.
But you know, in that tragedy, and in his darkness, he actually there was a lot of beauty that came out of it. Also, it's fascinating. I don't know what else to call it. Really, there's a lot of you can learn a lot from. There's a fine line, maybe for all of us, of who's really mad. You know.
Look, I saw the movie, and it was last year. I guess it was at the new director's new films. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, over at MoMA. Yeah.
Yes, and it was, and I think people who didn't know about him were like it's people just tapping into like the human element of it,
mm-hmm.
And I think the music to me almost, you know who it works at as almost a little bit in a weird way? It's almost like a weird, that universality to it, that it, you know, it's somebody talking about the emotions that everybody's got. And there's like a Woody Guthrie-ish
mm-hmm.
element to it.
Sure.
That, you know, just in terms of it's the guy kind of floating around the country. Like, see, there's your Bob Dylan thing where it's the guy. Woody Guthrie was actually, he actually was the Oki kind of logging the miles on the road, and he was also fighting a lot of mental illness also.
Sure.
So you know, and then you get your Pete Seegers where they were doing what Bob Dylan was doing, kinda pretending to be from somewhere that they weren't.
Right.
So there's a beauty here that I think people will really respond to, whether they're up to speed on the music or not.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, because we really need to tell everybody, and I'm not making this up, it's just not a music documentary. It's a portrait of an artist, and his art is just as important as his music. And you certainly, if you've never heard Daniel Johnson before, I don't believe you're going to walk out of this film and be like, oh, my God, I'm a Daniel Johnson music fan. It's just a point of entry. The music needs to be experienced, you know, on your iPod, in your car, in your home, on your stereo, like any other music. The film is a movie and just tells his story and journey. And it was not, you know, not my goal to shove this music down your throat.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, make up your own mind. It's, you know, music and art is very subjective. And I'm not looking to preach the gospel of Daniel Johnson, but I think his story is incredible, and that's why do you make a movie? Why do you write a novel? Because you think you have a great story to tell. And I really believe his story was worth telling, you know, on celluloid.
Well, Jeff Fierzig, director of The Devil and Daniel Johnson, I appreciate you spending an hour with us.
Tom Sharpling, an honor to be on the best show, WFMU, an honor.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you to say. The movie's out this Friday in New York and L.A., and it will visit your city soon if you're listening on the intranet. And you will, I can truly recommend it. If I was not a friend of yours, I would be a fan of this movie.
That's very nice of you, Tom. Thank you.
And let's listen to some Daniel Johnson right now. Here's another one of his hit singles. This is Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Right on.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye. Bye-bye. Show back for the final 35 minutes here. 201-209-9368 is the number. We're going to take it through strong. I want to thank Jeff Fierzig for coming on and doing what he does. The movie is seriously awesome, Devil and Daniel Johnson. People can check it out. I know you won't regret it. If you have a heart. People on the chat saying I'm over 45. How dare you? I'm 53 and proud of it. The West Coast Pop Art Experimental Band from their volume one, or part one, sorry, album. We heard Help, I'm a Rock. Reissued on the Sundays label. I believe that was in a Warner Brothers record back in the 60s. Kelly Stoltz before that from Below the Branches on the Sub Pop label. We heard Ever Thought of Coming Back. Great stuff from him. I believe Kelly Stoltz is going to be on the radio show hosted by Joe Belock this coming Tuesday, April 4th, noon to 3 p.m. Kelly Stoltz is going to be in studio. Going to be very exciting. That's next Tuesday. Higgins before that. Hot stuff. Local heroes, Higgins. From their Dear Higgins LP. We heard Drop Off. Good stuff. Magadie Records. You just contact info@magadie.com, and that's Magadie with two G's. And starting us off, the Neural Milk Hotel from their classic album called From the Airplane Into the Sea. We heard Ghost and track 10, the untitled track from them. And starting us off, speaking of Ghost, Casper the Friendly Ghost from Daniel Johnston from Yip Jump Music. Who wants to fight me over how good that movie is? Wah! People on the chat. Wah! Only a couple of them. Everybody in the chat's awesome. Only a couple of them. Couple babies. Babies need to get spankings. (201) 209-9368 That song was a Frank Zappa song? That West Coast pop art experiment? Oh, no. I gotta hose down the show with some Volcano Suns. FMU, you're on the air.
You're playing some Zappa. I love it.
Oh.
Sounded like it's... My favorite music of all time when I was kind of in my heyday was when Shake Your Booty came out.
Oh, Philly Boy Roy. Philly Boy Roy. Well, let me just say something. People are saying on the chat, you want to know what? I played the wrong song on the record. I meant to play I Won't Hurt You. So for people saying I answered the question, I don't like that song.
You should have played some from Joe's Garage.
You want to know what? I should have played... No, I should have definitely not played something from Joe's Garage.
Hot Rats?
From Hot Rats? No, thanks. I was not going to throw...
We're only in it for the money?
I was not going...
Play your guitar?
No, not going to play something from Shut Up and Play Your Guitar. I was not going to throw this record under the bus.
Peaches and Regalia?
No, I'm not going to play that either, Philly Boy Roy. I was not going to criticize this record, even though I played the wrong song on it. I thought that was kind of like, I thought there was like a hippie drivel element to it.
You know what you're talking about.
It was
corny.
You got
to come down to the Philly Folk Festival in Schwanksville sometime. I'll show you how we really throw down.
The Philly Folk Festival?
In Schwanksville.
Where is Schwanksville? What is Schwanksville?
Hello, do you live on Earth?
Yeah, I think that might be part of the problem.
It don't sound like you do. Schwanksville's great. It's kind of like west of Lansdale and Harleysville, Upper Salford, Lower Salford.
Mm-hmm. So,
out in the country.
Out in the country. I don't know Schwanksville.
A lot of Mennonites out there, but we don't hold it against them.
Oh, that's very generous of you not to,
They're a step hipper than the Amish.
Uh-huh.
They watch TV and they drive cars.
Okay, well,
and they go to the gentlemen's clubs from what I've seen.
So the gentlemen's club, you are noticing Mennonites in attendance.
Yeah, a proliferation of them.
Yeah, people were saying Zappa was anti-hippie. You know what? He wasn't anti. He wasn't anti-unfunny.
Hey, did you ever see him play that bicycle tire?
Oh, no, he was an anti-funny. I'm digging myself in some Zappa hole that I'm not in.
You love Zappa.
Oh, I hate Zappa.
So, I like your show now. I hated it for years.
Uh-huh.
I remember seeing Zappa at the Tower Theater. It was 1978.
Yeah.
First time I ever did, can I say the word pony keg?
Well, you just did.
I had a pony keg.
You drank a pony keg?
Two of them. Why?
By yourself?
Yeah.
Wow.
We all did.
That's a lot. That's a lot
Me,
of booze.
Steve, Kirk, Keith.
Those are your boys?
Yeah. We met that night. We all had pony kegs.
Do you still hang out with those guys?
No, they all died.
They all of them died of
yeah.
what? What did they die of?
Partying.
So they're all dead from partying?
Yeah, they all jumped in a quarry. Not at the same time, though. That was the weirdest thing.
They all jumped in a quarry and, like, fell?
The same quarry, yeah. 4 years apart.
Unbelievable.
It's kind of crazy. But I'm not calling to talk about them guys.
Uh-huh. Okay. Who,
I want to
what
talk
are you
to you
calling?
About something I'm really excited about.
And what is that?
Crawl spaces and cheesecakes.
Okay. I guess that begs the question. What is crawl spaces and cheesecakes?
Cheese steaks, you dummy.
What is
crawl spaces and cheesesteaks?
What is crawl spaces and cheesesteaks?
You ever heard of Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah, sure.
It's kind of like that. It's like a fancy board game.
Mm-hmm.
But it all takes place in the magical world of Philadelphia.
So it's like a fantasy thing?
Yeah, crawl spaces and cheesesteaks.
Oh, so that's like dungeons. Okay.
But yeah. Do you love it?
I don't know enough about it.
Well, let me tell you how you play it, okay?
Sure, go ahead.
You know, you roll the dice.
Uh-huh.
And you can become any one of hundreds of famous Philadelphians from its founding in 1682 to present.
Okay, so you can be any member of Philadelphia history.
Yeah, like you could take on the form of, like, say, Ben Franklin.
Uh-huh.
Ben Franklin to, like, T.O.
To Terrell Owens.
Yeah, Betsy Ross to Frank Rizzo to the drummer from Man Man.
Man Man?
Yeah.
What is Man Man?
You don't know about Man Man. They're only the hippest band happening right now.
No, I don't know about Man
Man. I ain't never heard of them neither, but they're supposed to be really far out. Like, take that Zappa tune you played.
Uh-huh.
Times it by, like, 37.
And that's Man Man.
Crazy.
Well, it sounds crazy.
So, basically, what happens in Crawl Spaces and Cheesesteaks...
Uh-huh.
You go all over the city stomping out evildoers.
Okay.
Like Aaron Burr, Albert Einstein, Brian De Palma, Frank Sinatra, Bruce Springsteen, Martha Stewart, people like that.
Wait, that list, Aaron Burr.
Yeah.
Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
And then you said Sinatra. Who
yeah.
else?
Brian De Palma.
Okay. Who else?
Springsteen.
Okay, so this is like a New Jersey.
Southside Johnny.
So you're stamping at people from New Jersey.
I never really thought about it that way. Yeah, I guess they are from New Jersey.
Oh, geez, that just dawned on you.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, New Jersey is evil central, ground zero.
New Jersey is... Well, how is New Jersey evil central?
Everybody knows that. You drive through their place, it smells like an armpit. Or a crotch.
Oh,
yeah.
You have no idea what you're talking about.
You have no idea how excited I am about this game. You know what you can even do?
What?
If you roll the dice, you can even become one or two of the Sopranos and take on the Jersey evildoers.
But it's a... You're taking on New Jersey people?
Yeah.
As who? Sopranos characters?
The Sopranos, yeah.
Well, they're from New Jersey.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, I definitely
know. From where?
New Jersey. The show takes place in New Jersey.
Hold on a second there.
What was that?
What was what?
What did you just say? Hold on a second there?
I said, well, hold on a second there.
Okay. You just caught me off guard a little bit. Now.
Wait, so you think they're from where?
New Jersey. I know they're from New
they're
Jersey.
They're from Philly, you dummy.
The Sopranos does not take place in Philly.
What Sopranos are you watching?
The one on HBO?
Well, that's the one I'm watching, too.
Are you that stupid that you don't realize that that show takes place in New Jersey?
So you're trying to tell me that The Sopranos, the show about the singing group from Philly, takes place in New Jersey? You're nuts.
Wait, what show are you talking about? What show is about a singing group in Philly?
The Sopranos, you dunce.
No, it's about a mafia family in New Jersey.
You're nuts. It's about a singing group from Philly. It's like in the opening credits, you know?
Yeah.
You know when the lead character, Fred, he's driving south on the New Jersey Turnpike out of the tunnel, and it goes back to Philly. The whole show takes place there. Looks like Lansdale or maybe Ambler to me.
You are so colossally stupid.
You don't talk to me like that. You know what?
What?
Do you know what?
What?
I talk to you like that.
Okay, I didn't see that coming. You think that takes place in Philly?
I know it does.
Well, you are completely wrong.
I don't think you know what you're talking about.
I know you don't know what you're talking about. Do you watch the show?
Of course I watch it. I watch it religiously since it started.
All they talk about is New Jersey.
No, they don't.
Sure they do. I was talking about Newark and, you know...
Not that I've seen.
What do you mean, not that you've seen? You've never seen an episode where they talked about...
I've seen them all.
You've seen...
I really haven't heard them.
So you've seen every episode of The Sopranos?
I've seen them all.
But wait, what did you say? You haven't heard them?
Yeah, basically.
And what does that mean?
Well, see, we're not like you guys up there. We're not all rich and we all live in castles on the beach.
I don't live in a castle on the beach.
Oh, you sound like you do. You're always coming off with this hoity-toity attitude.
Well, I don't know what to
probably
tell you.
Probably use doilies for toilet paper.
Yeah, well, no.
I know you think you do.
You know I think I do. Yeah. I don't.
Okay.
And I don't think I do.
So basically, we don't have the funds to get anything other than basic cable, so we don't got no HBO.
Okay.
But we do watch the show all the time.
How are you watching HBO without anything more than basic cable?
We go out to watch it.
Where?
Circuit City.
So you're watching The Sopranos at Circuit City?
Yeah, we either go to the one in Manayunk or the one at Granite Run Mall and Media.
And what, they won't put the sound on or something?
Well, no, we go there at 2 a.m. You know, it runs at like 10 o'clock or something on Sundays?
Yeah.
We go watch it at 2 a.m. when it's not so crowded.
But you're going to Circuit City at 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
And watching The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not, Circuit City's not open at 2 a.m.
No, but I've got one of them universal remote controls.
Uh-huh.
And it works on all the TVs on display in there. So I turn them all on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, get the whole family out. Rhoda, Roy Jr., Rhoda Jr., little Rhoda.
And where are you during this?
We sit in front of the store.
So you're like staring through the glass doors?
Oh yeah.
How far away is the TV? How many feet away?
It's pretty far, about 25 feet. But we pull out all our hoagies and we chow down while we watch Fred, Louise, Little Freddy, Skunk, Roddy on their adventures and stuff.
So you're watching The Sopranos every week without sound?
Yeah.
So,
see,
but
what happens is I figure out what's going on. I'm a pretty good lip reader.
Uh-huh.
And I tell all my family, Rhoda, Roy Jr., Rhoda Jr., little Rhoda, what the plot is and what's happening.
Uh-huh. Well, it sounds like you're doing an amazing job of it.
I love the show. We all do.
Well, you said it was Fred is the main guy?
Yeah, he's the main guy. You know, the big guy. With the pet bear, he's the lead singer.
With a pet bear?
Do I need to school you in The Sopranos? Okay, well, go back to season one. He's having these bad leg cramps.
Yeah.
So he goes to this doctor, Dr. Detweiler, to get leg cramp pills.
Okay.
And they start talking and stuff comes out that, you know, Fred's on shaky ground with his wife.
Yeah.
And that his son, Freddie Jr., he don't want to sing in the group. He wants to go work at Pat's Steaks. And there's this whole rivalry between Pat's and Jim's.
Uh-huh.
And he don't know what to do, so he firebombs Jim's Steaks. There's all kinds of plot twists that I guess you haven't picked up on or noticed.
Well, I think those are things that it sounds like you're filling in a lot of blanks with some very creative embellishments.
I don't think you know what you're talking about.
Well, I watch the show with sound.
I watch it, and I can figure it out without the sound. Who's smarter now, dunce?
Yeah. I think you just answered that question, because you're telling me the show takes place in Philly,
that
they're a singing group. And the main guy's name is not Fred, it's Tony Soprano.
What? You don't know what you're talking about.
So the guy's name isn't Tony Soprano?
No, it's Fred.
Fred what?
Excuse me?
Is that his last name, Soprano?
No.
Do you even know his last name?
It's Fred Detweiler, you dummy.
So there's Fred Detweiler and Dr. Detweiler.
Exactly.
Okay.
You don't know it's his cousin until season five.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He finds out that doctor is his cousin.
Yeah, after they make love.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I don't think that ever happened.
Oh, they sure did.
You're crazy.
There's that scene where they're doing it, where he goes into, like, this, like, thing. It's like almost like a dream, but it's real.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you're watching things like that and not knowing that they're not happening, that they're actual dream sequences.
They are so happening.
So there's like dream sequences on it that you're thinking are really happening.
They are happening. They're on the TV. And there's this also guy, this big guy, West Philly Bobby.
West Philly Bobby.
He's the baritone in the group. He gets killed kind of early on.
Uh-huh.
And his place gets taken by this other guy who's got these weird teeth.
Roosevelt Avenue Mike. Are you talking about? Have you ever seen Roosevelt Avenue Mike in any other movies?
I think I saw him in. It's the movie with those. It's these two nerdy girls.
Two nerdy girls.
Did you ever see that movie? It's kind of an art film. I saw it late at night.
Oh, you mean Ghost World?
It's about the kid, and he's into, like, old-timey music.
Yeah. Is that another movie you watched through the door at Circuit City?
No, I watched it through the door at my neighbor's.
So you're watching movies through your neighbor's
window. It was hot last summer, and I just kind of peeked my head in. He was asleep on the couch.
But could you hear the audio on that one?
Of course I could. And then I watched Malibu Express.
What's that?
You don't want to ask.
Okay, I won't.
Got some nudity in.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man, if Rhoda ever heard that I was watching Malibu Express or the Picasso Trigger, she would get so mad.
The Picasso Trigger?
Yeah, they're Sedaris films.
So, all right.
Andy Sedaris?
Uh-huh, okay.
It's titillating fair.
I thought that was a bad, like, action movie or something.
Oh, there you got to watch for longer than the first couple minutes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm missing, okay.
You're great. Missing a lot.
Great. I'm missing a lot of action, I'm sure. So you've seen that guy. What was his name again?
West Philly Bobby.
West Philly Bobby sounds like you're talking about Steve Buscemi.
I don't know what the actor's name is, but anyway, West Philly Bobby, he misses a performance.
Uh-huh.
And Fred goes out to his house. It looks like it's near Warrington to see what's up.
Uh-huh.
And he accidentally shoots him in the face with this gun that he found.
I don't think that was accidental.
It looked accidental to me.
Well, see, if you had audio, you would realize those things weren't accidents. You have the show completely misinterpreted.
No, I don't. What about old Vern?
Vern. Who is Vern?
The guy with the big glasses. He's Fred's father, the manager of the Sopranos.
You mean, that's Uncle Junior. Vern.
That's the dumbest name I've ever heard. Uncle Junior. Uncle commands respect, and then Junior sounds like he's got like a little one of those derbies or those things that has the propeller on the top.
Well, that's the character's name. I didn't name him. That's his name on the show.
Old Vern.
It's not Old Vern.
He's hilarious. He's so crabby, and, you know, sometimes he says stuff like this. There was one scene where he was so mad at Fred, he goes, "Oh, Fred, you make me as mad as a rattlesnake at a Thai wedding."
You're just making this stuff up, though.
No, I'm not.
You're not.
My eyes see what they see.
So this is your lip. This is your lip reading.
No, well, essentially, yeah. But what about Fred's cousin Todd?
Who is Todd?
The guy with the pompadour. Looks like Fonzie.
Oh no, that's Sylvia. That's little Steven.
Sylvia? No, it's not a woman. It's a dude. You dummy. You dumb, stupid jerk.
Oh, you are so.
See, Todd's totally into doo-wop, but Fred wants to stay with the contemporary stuff.
Like, what does the band sound like? What kind of songs are they doing?
Oh, they do all kinds. Well, see, Fred wants to stay with stuff like Gavin DeGraw and Kelly Clarkson, the new stuff that people in South Philly want to hear.
Uh-huh. And what kind of stuff the other guy, what's his name?
Todd.
Todd wants to do...
He wants to do doo-wop.
I like how none of these guys have a... What are some of these names? Todd, Fred, Vern.
The Detweiler clan.
The show's called The Sopranos. They're Italian.
There's The Sopranos. They're a singing group, you stupid dumb dunce jerk.
Oh, you couldn't be more misguided.
They're practically Mennonites.
But you're filling in these details for your family?
Yeah.
Is this like you telling the story to them?
I tell the story like this past week. You know, Todd, he got really sick and they had to cart him off.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
Because he got food poisoning from a bad hoagie from a New Jersey Wawa.
Well, what about didn't you see him get shot in that episode?
He didn't get shot. What are you, nuts?
The first episode this year, you didn't see the guy who you call Old Vern.
Yeah.
You didn't see him shoot the guy you call Fred.
No. He was pointing at him.
Pointing a gun at him.
It was a metal stick.
That was a gun.
No, it wasn't.
It was.
You don't know what you're talking about. What about Sean the Skunk?
Sean, that must be Paulie Walnuts with the hair.
Who? What kind of a name is that?
I don't know what to tell you. I didn't name these guys.
You're making this up.
I didn't name these guys.
Well, Sean the Skunk, he's the black sheep. He's been having this affair with Fred's wife.
Uh-huh.
The Sopranos keyboardist, Sheila.
Yeah.
They love each other, but they want to do their own thing, kind of like Seals and Crofts or Hyman and Bazillion.
Hyman and what?
Bazillion.
The two guys from the Hooters?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me for just questioning that to make sure I got that right.
Well,
sir.
Everyone knows who they are.
Everyone knows who they are.
Yeah.
The two guys from the Hooters.
All the guys in the Hooters. All five of them.
You can't name anyone from the Hooters.
Oh, I certainly can. Which era do you want me to name? Let's do the classic era.
Okay.
Rob Hyman, Eric Bazillion, David Wasikinen on the drums, Rob Lilly on rhythm guitar, and... who was the bass player? The bass player, I got it, Rob Miller. Did coke with all of them.
What? You what?
Yeah.
You did coke with the Hooters?
Oh, yeah, we all did it back then.
When was back then?
Oh, man. Well, classic era, 83.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So up until 89. Still seen every now and then, still do a couple rails.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's great.
That's terrible.
Oh, you love it. You haven't lived. Like it says in the Bible, thou ain't lived till thou did rails with the Hooters.
That's in the Bible?
Seems like it would be, don't it?
No, it doesn't even seem like it would be. It doesn't seem like it would be in the Bible for 1 second.
Well, let's talk about Roddy.
On The Sopranos.
Yeah.
Which one is he?
He's the little fat kid, Freddie's valet. He's also the drummer in the band.
The little fat kid?
Yeah.
No, that's his son on the show.
What?
Anthony Jr.
That's the dumbest name I've ever heard. Okay, well, let's see if our little plot line's
so the name Anthony, you're saying his AJ is a dumb name?
It's a stupid name.
You think AJ is a stupid name?
I know it is.
I don't know.
Okay, so what do you think his little plot line is?
What do I think?
I'll tell you what mine is first for him.
Okay, and then I'll tell you what it actually is.
Okay. Well, his sort of main, his biggest scene ever, I think it was a few seasons ago.
Yeah.
Roddy's got chronic night diarrhea, and they take him to this hotel in the city to get an exorcism.
So there's ghosts and things in the show.
Well, more like demons.
Demons. Yeah, that's not on the one I saw.
Okay, what did you see? Teach me. I want to learn.
Now, which scene were you talking about?
The one where he goes in the city.
I don't even remember that.
Okay. Looks like someone don't watch the show.
No, someone do watch. Someone don't not.
You just said you do not watch the show.
Yeah, now you got me talking like you.
That's a blessing.
That's a curse.
Oh, it's a blessing.
That's the worst thing that could happen.
It's the greatest thing. The greatest love of all, like Whitney Houston sang.
What is? Me talking like you?
Yes.
Is somehow the greatest.
It's the missing verse. The greatest love of all is to talk like someone from Roxborough.
Oh, you are so... You are so confusing, and you're actually confusing me now.
Guess what I did the other day?
What?
Played Crawl Spaces and Cheesesteaks.
I'm sure you did. With
guess
who?
Guess who I killed?
Who?
You.
Oh, geez, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Guess how I did it?
How?
I turned into Julius Erving, and I flew across the city, and I stabbed you in the face with a sharpened peanut chew.
Oh, my God.
You know why I did it?
No, I don't.
Because you was trying to suck the power out of David Brenner.
I was trying to suck the power out of David Brenner.
Yeah, his funny stuff.
So you killed me with a sharpened peanut chew.
Oh, yeah, and I'll do it again.
In your stupid role-playing
game. I'll do it tomorrow.
Can I
put you down for a couple of these games?
Where do you play them?
You play them on your table, your kitchen table. It's a board game.
So what would that mean? I'd have to come over to your house?
No, you play it with your friends. I'll play if you want, but I'm probably light years beyond you.
I'm sure you are better at Crawl Spaces and Cheesesteaks than
yeah?
I am. Yeah, I'm going to concede that. I'm going to give you that one.
Okay, so I win. Listen, everybody, I win.
Yeah, you win.
Say it.
You win.
Who wins?
Philly Boy Roy wins.
Over who?
He's better at Crawl Spaces and Cheesesteaks than me because I've never played it.
Even if you did play it, I'd still kick your butt. You know why?
Why?
Because I'd sharpen a candy cake into like a little throwing star.
Uh-huh. I'd
get you in the throat, right in the jugular.
Right in the what?
Right in the jugular vein.
The jugular vein.
Yep.
Does nobody know how to say that the jugular? It's not jugular.
What is it?
The vein.
It's the vein in your throat. The jugular vein.
No, that's called the jugular vein.
What is?
That vein.
No, it's not. You're so stupid.
I don't know what to say to you, Philly Boy Roy, other than it sounds like you're having a blast watching The Sopranos and filling in all the story details on your own, making it Philly-centric.
You don't watch yourself. You're going to get filled in.
What's that? So is that a threat?
Oh, you take it as however you want to take it.
I think I'm taking it as a threat. I don't know how I could take it any other way.
You're going to get some Yingling where you don't want it.
Oh, you're gross.
Down below.
I've had enough of you.
Down below, you're going to get it.
I've had enough of you.
Okay.
You're
going to get it.
Well, keep
watching. I win, you lost again.
Keep watching The Sopranos from 25 feet away in the parking lot of a Circuit
Fred's
City.
Fred's doing it.
Fred.
Fred's going to be on the cover of the TV Guide next week, from what I hear, my sources say.
Oh, oh, you have some sources over at TV Guide?
Yeah.
Maybe you can open the TV Guide and realize his name's not Fred.
Maybe I already know everything I want to know and can know.
So you won't open the TV Guide?
I don't need to open a paper. I don't need to buy a paper. Not that I could afford it anyway.
You're just
all
beyond that.
I'm outsourcing the jobs up to New Jersey from down here.
You're just beyond everything.
No, I just can't afford it. I don't got the breaks that you guys get up there.
Yeah, you're right. We get all the breaks up here.
You do.
All those Philly jobs have been taken.
They are. They're all outsourced up there.
What's outsourced? What jobs? Like, what jobs?
All of it. My pencil job went up there.
So the pencil factory's up here now.
Gone. It closed down.
And it moved
to
New Jersey.
Went up to Trenton. I'm not going to commute up there.
Why not?
Smell that air.
Yeah, that awful air in Trenton, as opposed to the air in Philly, which is how many minutes away?
Oh, I don't know, but it seems like a whole world away. It's like paradise versus Hades.
Paradise versus Hades.
Yeah.
Oh, Philly boy, Roy.
Okay. I've about had enough of this. I'm kind of bored.
I'm sorry.
Might go down to the 7-Eleven.
And do what?
Read rock magazines. Kind of in Dutch with Rhoda.
You're in Dutch with Rhoda?
Yeah, so what I do, I'll hang out at the 7-Eleven, read rock mags till around 4 a.m., then kind of slink home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rock mags.
Revolver.
You like to read Revolver in the
parking
lot?
I like to keep up on some of the heavy stuff.
Like what bands?
Oh, geez. AFI. Stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah. You see Fall Out Boy on SNL?
Yeah, I did.
I thought they were great.
Oh, wow. I really didn't.
What?
I didn't think they were great.
Well, I think you were wrong.
Well, that's why everybody has opinions.
You're going to get some pranks up there, too, then.
Oh, so I'm not entitled to have an opinion on how Fall Out Boy was on Saturday Night Live. I can't win. Wah, wah, wah. But you know who can win? You, if you enter the Best Show on WFMU theme song contest. You get more information over at friendsoftom.com. Go to friendsoftom.com. Get more information on the theme song contest over there. We're going to make a ruling in April. Late April. Late April ruling coming. Late April. 1 minute left in the show, so everybody knows. Best show back. It's a little, kids doing it. Be back next week. Next week, exciting show planned. Got all kinds of stuff ready for you. Stuff you can't even imagine the stuff I'm going to drop next week on the show. Thought it was shocking when I went after the bike gangs, the mutant bike gangs. Get ready for next week. I'm going to be like Arnold Diaz in here. Shame on you. It's going to be shame on you. Play some contest entries next week. Fun guests, laughs, mirth, music mayhem. Get the podcast over at friendsoftom.com. This is WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, worldwide, World Wide Web at WFMU.org. This has been the best show. Please stay tuned from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Bill is going to take you all the way through. Then Billy Jam comes in, takes you through the morning, and then it's time to do something else if you like other things. Stay tuned for Bill.